Cause we're tired of being Chicago. We're tired of being Chicago. We're tired of being Chicago. Bears Blues. We're gonna win this year.
Yeah, there you go. We're tired of the Chicago Bears Blues. 312-981-7200. It is time for the Monday Evening Quarterback with Adam Hoge, our Bears insider. He joins us for the hour every Monday to break down what we saw on Sunday from our beloved Chicago Bears. You can find all his work at WGNradio.com/Bears. And Adam Hoge, I had high hopes for not the season, but this segment. And I feel like maybe it's us.
No. No, it's not us. We did just fine last year.
We did. So, all right, let's get into this first off. There's so much to unpack about what happened yesterday in a loss at Lambeau Field. But the first thing to unpack is that the Bears had their backs against the wall, and boy, oh boy, they sure didn't play like that in the first three quarters.
Yeah, it was disappointing to see the offense kind of regress back to where it had been for most of the season, and you know, it keeps going back to the inability to run the football. Matt Nagy was trying to run the ball early, and on the Bears' first five rushing attempts by running backs, so taking out, you know, Mitch runs, just handoffs to the running backs, they counted for -2 yards on their first five attempts, and that just. It goes back to the things we were talking about earlier in the season. You know, not having success on first and second down, it makes everything harder on third down. And, you know, I actually thought Trubisky was okay on third down yesterday, but there was just too many. I mean, I think there was 20 third downs. They had to go for it 20, 20 times on third down. Just way too much. And just this kind of the same stuff we've seen all season.
The thing that I think a lot of Bears fans scratch their head at is that you'll see the success of a game plan against, say, the Dallas Cowboys, where we saw Mitch Trubisky for the first time this season really run the ball and become a running quarterback. And I know teams are going to scheme to take that away, but it seemed like that was an anomaly to the Bears, and that was not part of their game plan. And that part of the game just disappeared for them.
Well, I think part of it is that they were playing from behind, which was unfortunate. You know, they weren't in a rhythm early. Which, you know, it's just different from the last couple games. And they're also playing a better football team. But I get back to early on in the game, if they've been able to run the football. And and look, the Packers were out there with 5-6 defensive backs. They were daring the Bears to run the football, and they're not a good run defense. And the Bears just couldn't do it. So I thought that really hurt them early. And then you throw in the unfortunate call on Cordarrelle Patterson on the punt coverage where he forces the fumble. The Bears recover, and all of a sudden the Bears are down 7-0 instead of potentially having a lead. So I think that hurt them the rest of the game. And then once you are playing from behind and you have 83 plays, you're just throwing the ball a lot at that point. And then you know, I think they were doing some of the things that you saw against the Cowboys and Lions, but not enough of it. And you just, when you have 83 plays, you can't do it every play. And they just weren't in a rhythm.
Okay, here's the line. Someone I was watching a game with, I think it was my dad or my brother, said, we have a running quarterback who doesn't like to run. And you get the vibe that Mitch Trubisky isn't looking to run. And I don't understand, because you see the running backs today, and especially some of the ones that have been drafted in the last couple of years, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, even Patrick Mahomes to an extent. These guys are not, they don't seem so chaotic and panicked when into a scramble. And I don't know what it is about Mitch Trubisky, but it seems like he's a running quarterback that does not want to run the ball.
Well, I do think early in the season there was somewhat of a reluctance, and I don't know if that had to do with his shoulder or him and Matt Nagy just, you know, trying to make him more of a pocket quarterback, which you need to be able to be in the NFL too. But they did do it in recent weeks, and Mitch was having success. The Packers playing those defensive backs and sitting back a little bit more were spying Trubisky a lot more than we've seen. So they give the Packers credit for adjusting and realizing what was killing Bears opponents in recent weeks when the Bears got their offense going. So I do think you give Mike Pettine credit for that. And that was an adjustment they made yesterday that kind of took away the run. Now, there were a couple plays, though, where I thought, you know, Trubisky could have tucked it. You kind of remember that pass late where he was sort of scrambling and he sort of fired a little shovel pass to Tariq Cohen like 4 feet away from him. And Cohen couldn't catch it because he was just too close. You know, that was a play right there where Trubisky could have tucked it and picked up. It only would have been 4 or 5 yards. And then he would have slid, but that would have been better than nothing, which is what happened when he tried to fire the ball.
I felt
away.
There were a few times he was in the shotgun early in the game in the RPO, and he had the ability to tuck it and run as opposed to handing it off to Montgomery, that he defaulted to handing it off to the running back who just ran straight into the pile for these notorious second and nines. But it just felt like last week against the Cowboys, he kept the ball, he slid, it was a 3 yard gain, it was a 5 yard gain, sometimes it was open. They didn't even attempt it. That's my part, is that I just feel like at some point or another, they just went away from it and seemed like that's not going to be a complete game plan with this quarterback.
Yeah, so I mean, on those RPOs, it's a read that Trubisky has, and I haven't really, once I get the coach's film, I'll be able to get a better idea of if he was making those reads correctly. Matt Nagy did say today that there were a handful of runs in there that turned into passes based on the read. And sometimes you make the right read and they just make the tackle and it looks bad, but actually the quarterback did their job. And then sometimes, as we saw earlier in the season, Trubisky wasn't always making the right read. But that had improved in recent weeks. So I'll have to wait and see more on the coach's film. But I just want to point out overall with this run game, you know, or should we save it for after the next segment? Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I go back to when they lost to the Raiders in London. Trubisky didn't even play in that game. But to me, the run game was such a disaster going into the bye week that I wrote at that time that for the Bears season to be saved, they had to fix the running game. They entered that game against the Raiders with the league's 25th ranked rushing offense, averaging just 90.3 yards per game. After that game where they struggled again, and then they go in the bye week, they did make some changes. That's when they benched Kyle Long. That's when they put him on IR, and they went ahead with Rashad Coward. They didn't make the center switch with Cody Whitehair and James Daniels quite that week, but they ended up doing that later in the season. With some positive results, it seems like the running game's been better. However, here we are 10 games later.
Yeah.
The Bears now rank 29th, so they've actually gone backwards. And they're averaging 85.6 rushing yards, 5 less per game than they were back when I wrote that column when they lost to the Raiders in London. So it's actually gone backwards, and that also includes a recent uptick in Trubisky running with the football. So honestly, this just hasn't been working all season. I asked Matt Nagy today, not only about this season, but the last 2 years, and asked him to reflect on why it hasn't been consistent. And he said he takes it personally. And he essentially vowed to get it fixed for next year. Unfortunately, we heard the same story this past offseason. So it's one of those things where until you see it, you're not going to believe it.
Well, we'll take our break now. And when we come back, we'll talk about the coach's responsibility. For a team that is 29th in the run and high 20s in all total offense, who's on the hook for that? If there was an offensive coordinator like we've had in the past, a Dow Loggins or an Adam Gase, they'd be on the hook for it. But for whatever reason, we're just okay with it as fans for one of the most underperforming offenses in the entire NFL. Adam Hoge, WGN's Bears insider, is with us for the Monday evening quarterback. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Take a break, come back, stay with us. 720 WGN, it's the Monday evening quarterback with Adam Hoge. You can find all his stuff at Adam Hoge on Twitter, but also at WGNradio.com/Bears. And we're talking about the loss yesterday that ended this, I would say, unimpressive and miserable season. Who's to blame here? And the offense was supposed to be the shining moment, and Matt Nagy, he inherited a great defense. But for whatever reason, this offense is worse than what was under John Fox statistically. So are the heads going to roll? Are we going to see the end of some of these position coaches? Is Matt Nagy going to stop calling plays and hire somebody to do that? What happens when an offense is so putrid?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch because, if this was a situation where you had an offensive coordinator separate from the head coach, somebody that was just running the offense and running their system, that person would almost certainly be fired. at the end of the season, right? And you would bring in somebody new. You would, you know, kind of look at what the Vikings did last year, where they get John DeFilippo out of there. He was an awkward fit. Did not that offense did not play to Kirk Cousins' strengths, and they let Kevin Stefanski, who was an in-house coach, take over. But they also brought in Gary Kubiak in the offseason, and they had a renewed commitment to the running game and went to more play action and things that suited Kirk Cousins' game more. And the Vikings are headed back to the playoffs, and they can win the NFC North here with a strong final 2 weeks. They host the Packers next week. So that's the kind of thing that would happen if you had a separate offensive coordinator. They don't. This is Matt Nagy's show, and he's the head coach. And Matt Nagy, I will continue to defend him as a head coach. I think the overwhelming majority of his in-game stuff has been good. There's obviously been some few exceptions. And in the way he kept the team together this year, I still points to a strong head coach who has a good handle on his program. But the offensive side of things needs to improve. So how do they go about doing this? There could be changes with his staff, but this is still his show. And so I think what he needs to really do is this offseason go back and reflect on what's working. And I read something today, Justin, in Peter King's Football Morning in America column. He went and talked to Mike McCarthy, the former Packer head coach, who's still living outside Green Bay and has spent the entire year studying offenses and trying to reinvent himself as he tries to get another head coaching gig. And this is an offensive mind, similar, you know, situation of Matt Nagy, where he's a head coach and running the offense. And one of the things that stood out is a note that is in this column by Peter King that Mike McCarthy keeps at his desk, which is less volume, more creativity. And I do wonder if right now in this system with Matt Nagy, there's just too much volume. And I think what he needs to do is go back this offseason, look at what you actually have on this roster, what strengths fit your players, and adapt the offense. Maybe put more play action in there, maybe more I formation, mm-hmm. things like that, so they're more prepared. And that's what they need to be running in Bourbonnais. They can't be scrambling in the middle of the season like they were this year to tailor the offense to what Mitch Trubisky does best.
You know, I got to say, last year I felt like one of the strengths of the Bears was that Matt Nagy would script the first couple plays like every team does, the first drive perhaps. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this. Mitch Trubisky would have an awesome first drive, and they get points on the board. And after the game kind of evolved.
Well, they're playing ahead then.
Right, but when the game evolved, he had trouble figuring out where he was supposed to put the ball when it wasn't scripted. This year, the stat this year, which stands out to me, is first quarter score. They don't score. Yesterday, they didn't score a touchdown till the end of the fourth quarter, end of the third quarter. My point being that strength has turned into a weakness, where I don't know what they're doing with their game plan during the week, but the first drives for the Chicago Bears are atrocious. And it continues to be atrocious with these little swing passes to Tariq Cohen for 2 yards and finding themselves, like you said, in third down after third down after third down after third down. So what happened from last year when that was a strength to this year when it's just an atrocious weakness?
Yeah, you're dead on. I mean, there's no question that changed dramatically this year. I think part of it is the Bears were operating from an advantage standpoint last year of sort of the unknown, and that defenses didn't know what it was going to look like and what exactly the Bears had, and they were coming off another tough season, new head coach, so they had some advantages there, and they were coming out.
They snuck up on people, right?
They did, and so what happened is these coaches and these teams spend so much time and resources in the offseason, specifically, you know, the months of January, February, March, when they're eliminated, before the team gets back together in the spring, researching all this and watching film. They know their opponents, so they know who they're playing the upcoming year, and they study this stuff. And I think teams adjusted. To what Matt Nagy and Mitch Trubisky were doing well last season, and they started taking that away from the jump right when games started.
And when you
saw that week one against the Packers, and it was a problem all year.
And you can't run the ball, then obviously the things they're keeping open, just as you said, I mean, they're putting defensive backs out there saying, we're not going to let you scramble around here, we're not going to let you throw little post routes. you have to run the ball, and the Bears couldn't do it.
But also, it execution, too. I mean, we can't let the players off the hook here. The offensive line regressed. Big the time, tight yeah. end was non-existent. And that U tight end in Matt Nagy's system is so, so important. You saw it in the playoff game against the Eagles last year when Trey Burton didn't play. The Eagles were able to adjust and take Tariq Cohen out. And the trickle-down effect hurt them in that game. And that was sort of the... It was a precursor to what we saw all of 2019, because they just didn't have that position. They did not have that threat. Teams weren't worried about it. And I think that's another adjustment, by the way, the Packers made, because finally the Bears were able to find the tight end against the Cowboys. Yeah, the Packers adjusted yesterday. And it was gone again. So execution matters.
Okay, so another question I have is that there's so much desire, and this may be a year or two old now, to find the next Sean McVay. And to find these coaches that are coming in who also call plays, who are offensive-minded. But I have to say that it seems that you're seeing, and this is how the NFL works, in a blink of an eye, John Harbaugh and the Baltimore Ravens have evolved offense, right? They've changed the game again. And it's not the coach that's calling. It's an offensive coordinator. Sean McVay and his Rams have regressed. They're going to miss the playoffs. The new coach down in Arizona can't figure it out. I mean, they're going to have a terrible losing season. So the question is, the trend of having the head coach call plays, is that the trend in the NFL? And if it's not, can we get that play sheet out of Matt Nagy's hands?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's less about who's calling the plays and more so just about staying ahead of the game. Whether it's the head coach calling the plays or, like you brought up, the Ravens and Greg Roman's there, and Greg Roman's been around. He had Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco, and all of a sudden they hire him in Baltimore, and they completely, change this offense to fit Lamar Jackson. And so what's happening right now is the league is scrambling to stop what the Ravens are doing because they weren't ready for it. These defensive coaches, in today's NFL, with all the passing and the high quarterback play from a lot of teams, there's like sort of this misconception that offense is just better than defense. And part of it's the rules, and everybody wants to see points. But the reality is these defensive coaches are still smart, and they do adjust. So what looks like the hot new trend disappears within two or three years because everybody adjusts. And so we're seeing that right now with what the Bears did in 2018 to 2019. So it's adapt or die. It's always adapt or die. It's always been that way, and it will continue to be that way.
And that's what scares us as Bears fans, is that that is what happened this year. Adapt or die. We died.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about. So I think the Bears' biggest fix, maybe it's make some changes on the coaching staff, but more importantly, it's just spend this offseason figuring out what you can do different to stay ahead of the game while tailoring your offense to Mitch's strengths. It can't just be this system worked under Andy Reid. This system works. This is what I believe in, and I'm going to continue to do. Those are the coaches that eventually fail. You have to adapt what you're doing. And the same thing with the Ravens. The Ravens can't come back next year. They might go on and win the Super Bowl with what they're doing right now.
Right.
But everyone's going to spend their entire offseason trying to figure out how to stop Lamar Jackson. Every team that knows they have the Ravens on the schedule next year is going to do that. So they're going to have to adapt too, or they're going to fall off next season no matter what happens here in the next month or so.
Well, it makes you, and I hate to say it, but it makes you understand and respect organizations like the Packers or the Patriots who have found themselves staying ahead of the curve. Even this season, when the Packers are obviously without monster talent like they've had in the past, they're still finding ways to stay ahead of the Bears defense or stay ahead of the Bears offense, and that I guess comes down to coaching and preparation.
Well, and the Packers right now are a good example. Nothing about the Packers really screams to me that they're going to win the Super Bowl.
No.
They don't even really have that many impressive wins on their resume. But at some point, when you win 11 games in a season, you've done something right. And what they've done is, and I'll give Aaron Rodgers credit for not being stubborn. He's been able to put his ego, check his ego, and realize that the best option for them right now is to run the football more. He doesn't have a ton of weapons like he's had in the past. And Aaron Jones is having an outstanding season. They're running that offense through Aaron Jones. And so You know, that's right now what teams are doing. They're adjusting to what Matt LaFleur brought in. And I, not to bash what Green Bay's doing, and I know I kind of did that last week, but I think right now I would peg them as a prime team to regress next season. Because I think everybody's going to adjust.
Yeah, well, the one thing they had yesterday that we didn't was the will to, and the heart to win. And in the, they came out of that locker room, they scored twice on two drives, and they shoved the Bears' defense in the mouth. And that's the thing that, that has been missing this year for the Bears, where you haven't seen the Bears' offense do that. Sans maybe the game against the Cowboys, which was great. But yesterday, when you needed them to come out of the coaching staff, the players to come out with heart on the road, it was the other way around. So maybe that's the heart of a champion or a playoff team or whatever you want, even when they have deficient talent. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll continue this conversation. It's the Monday Evening Quarterback, one of my favorite segments, with one of my favorite guys, Adam Hogue, who covers the Bears for WGN Radio. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. It's the Monday Evening Quarterback. Adam Hogue is here, and he, of course, covers the Bears for WGN, wgnradio.com/Bears, where you can read a great piece today about the run game and where it's non-existent. Adam, let's shift to the other side of the ball. We'll come back to the offense at one point. But the defense, again, that heart I was talking about right before we went to this break, you see it a little bit in the defense, but not – not as, I don't know, not as world-beating like they were last year.
No, and, you know, I think it starts up front. The pass rush just wasn't the same this season. And, you know, I think that that's where it gets reflected in the takeaways. We all knew that it was going to be virtually impossible for them to come up with 36 takeaways. Again, although there are three teams right now that are above there have 32 or more. The Patriots are at 36, the Steelers are at 35, and the Seahawks are at 32. What do all those teams have in common? They're headed to the playoffs. And then the Vikings and 49ers are right behind them. So there's obviously a strong correlation between teams that take the ball away and go to the playoffs and have success. You saw that last season. And the Bears are at 16. So they had 36 last year, and they have 16 right now. So basically on pace for half of the takeaways they did last year. And I think it starts up front. You know, I've been reluctant to criticize his defense too much this season because I think they've just had no help from the offense.
And injuries have been bad.
And I can see on tape what teams are doing to Khalil Mack, so I've also been reluctant to, you know, criticize him too much. But at some point, when you're paying this guy the money you are, and he's the highest paid defensive player in football, Ted Monachino, the Bears offensive, outside linebackers coach, likes to talk about players being effective but not productive. So if you're not putting up the numbers, as long as you're still being effective and you're moving the pocket and you're pressuring the quarterback, there's still things you can do on tape that are helping your team win. But when you're getting paid that much money, at some point there needs to be production. And this just, I'm sorry, I hate to say it, at the end of the day, I know Khalil Mack still had a good year. But he did not have a Khalil Mack year, in my opinion. And there needs to be more there for this trade that they made, which I would do it again. Don't get me wrong. But for it to be fully complete, he needs to play better next season. And that pass rush up front is what creates the takeaways on the back end.
Well, you know, we were kind of robbed this season. And that's football. I mean, that's how it goes when it comes to injuries. Because it really never had Khalil Mack, Roquan Smith, Akeem Hicks, Leonard Floyd, and Danny Trevathan on the field at the same time. I mean, early in the season, Akeem Hicks went out and Roquan as well. It's hard to say because in week one, when they played the Packers on the opening game, it was flying around like chaos. I mean, they were making Aaron Rodgers look very, very pedestrian, and they did yesterday to an extent. But we were robbed a little bit to not see all of these guys playing at full strength.
Yeah, no, and that's fair, and certainly that plays a part in what the defense did this season. You're right. I mean, they really weren't at full strength after those first few games, and I think we forget that those first few games this year, we were talking about the defense being just as good. We were talking about them. They hadn't skipped a beat. They were dominant up front, and that's how it looked. Khalil Mack had forced four fumbles in the first 4 weeks, I believe.
Yeah. It wasn't until that Raiders game that Gruden just ran the ball down their throat. And that was the first time we went, what's happening? Are they hungover? Or is it London? Did they get there late? We were having all these. And then it just kept happening.
Yeah, and it seemed like from that point on, now first of all, Akeem Hicks gets hurt in that game, so it becomes easier to stop Khalil Mack, but whatever the Raiders did in that game became the blueprint for the rest of the season. But even early on, I mean, Roquan Smith wasn't himself, and then you get the injury to Akeem Hicks, and then you get the injury to Danny Trevathan, and this defense just wasn't together the same way. They did not create the same amount of pressure, and on the back end, they didn't create the same amount of takeaways. It was not a bad year for the defense, but it wasn't the same year, and it needs to be better next season.
There was a little, I think, across the board, regression is a great word for this segment, but there was regression in the sense that the last couple years for Vic Fangio's defense, before the last year's breakout year, they were stout. They were top 10 defense, but they could not get any takeaways. Seems like that's exactly the story of the 2019 Bears, that they played, they were in positions, they forced a lot of third downs. That touchdown yesterday was a fourth down play. They were there, but they just couldn't make the play and get the ball when they needed to. There's a great stat, and I think it was in your piece, about that they didn't start, I forgot where I was reading this, but they didn't start in their opponent's territory all season, the offense, because the defense didn't take anything away.
Yeah, if that's true, that's amazing.
It isn't that I read. Yeah. I forgot where I read it today, but it was I think it was Mayer's piece in ChicagoBears.com that they never started inside the opponent's territory the entire season, or if not the entire season, the last five games.
Okay.
But the point being that this is a problem for an offense that is struggling, that the defense can't get them the ball.
Yeah, it certainly helps. And I think that what we learned in 2018 was the Bears defense doing exactly that and creating such good field position for the offense covered up some of their inefficiencies and really, helped the offense. It probably didn't make us realize in the offseason how much, they really were lacking. And I think that's part of the overall regression of this team in 2019 that you saw. So I've randomly seen some people go after Chuck Pagano. I think for the most part he did a pretty good job keeping this thing together. I would much more blame just the lack of a pass rush and not taking the ball away and not getting help from the offense.
I go to this regression word, but Kyle Fuller, who had a great year last year, I think he was a Pro Bowler last year, again, we started to see him have the same problems he had in the John Fox tenure where the ball is in his hands and he's dropping it. And there, I think it was the Rams. He had a pick six that would have changed the outcome of that game in the fourth quarter, and he just dropped it. Yesterday, Nick Kwiatkowski drops an interception. I'm not saying that was a game changer, but that those are momentum plays. And it just seemed like we saw more often than not these guys bat the ball down or not be able to get the interception, just stuff that you're not seeing playoff-caliber teams make mistakes on.
Yeah, and there's no debating that. I think that, Eddie Jackson, too. Eddie Jackson, one interception, it was like, garbage time to seal a game. Not garbage time, but, late in the game, really just a toss-up in Detroit to seal the game. But teams are avoiding him, and teams are avoiding Kyle Fuller, too. So that's part of the equation, but still, I mean, it's like you still need production at some point, and it's certainly, part of why this team is now 7-7.
Yeah. I will give them credit, the defense, for depth. And we talked about this last week with Ryan Pace, and the inside linebackers of Kwiatkowski and Pierre Lewis held their own yesterday and continued. Pierre Lewis looks like a bona fide backup, or if not a starter in other places. But that was a problem in the past where a Pernell McPhee would get hurt and we'd have nobody there to back him up. So that part actually worked out where you didn't see too much, downturn when these guys got hurt.
And that play that Nick Kwiatkowski made late in that game to just run over Aaron Jones, and I talked to him after the game in the locker room, and he was like, look, the sack getting Aaron Rodgers to the ground was just a bonus at that point. I mean, he realized he couldn't get around the running back who picked him up on his blitz, and so he just had to go through him and try to affect the quarterback, and he just did it. he did it with such force that he ended up still getting Aaron Rodgers to go down. And what an enormous play in a huge situation where a field goal would have sealed the deal for the Packers, and he pushed them out of field goal range.
Yeah, a great showing for that defense late in that game where they started to win again. And I said this at the beginning. The game yesterday was an entire metaphor for the season, where the first three quarters you're trying to fight, you're essentially ready to turn the channel. I mean, you really were. It was just like, oh man, I can't believe we laid an egg. And then there's this furious kind of comeback at the end, flipping the ball around, trying to do laterals and trick plays to get there and ultimately fail. That seems like the 2019 Chicago Bears season.
It does. But I do think that fight that the Bears have still had this season is a sign, and I don't think people want to hear this right now, but it is a sign that I think that there should still be a lot of optimism about next season. I still think this team is young enough and has enough pieces that are up and coming. Guys like Anthony Miller, who was really come on late here, and the Bears needed another weapon for Mitch Trubisky. And they're going to do something at tight end. The position's just too important for them to ignore it this year. And you have Roquan Smith on defense, who was really starting to come on as like that all-pro player I thought he was going to be all year. So there's a lot of signs here that the Bears are going to go from like the team that regressed this season to pick it back up next year and be right back in the hunt. And that's where I am right now. It's tough to accept right now in such a disappointing season. But I do think that fight that they've shown in games where they've still come up short is a good indication that they're still within this competitive window. But it is a little scary that they are two full seasons into the Khalil Mack era now, and they don't have a playoff victory.
Yeah, I know. And 219 says all Bears fans do is cry, cry, cry. And I know we have a bad stereotype in Chicago for completely being pessimistic, but there is expectations for this to be a playoff team.
There's also a lot of things to cry about.
Yeah, this was a rebuild under John Fox. It got us to the point where Matt Nagy came in. We got a 12-14. We got a number two overall quarterback. We got the best defensive player in football. This should be an 11-5 team every year, right? This should be the team that goes to the playoffs.
Well, and this wasn't going to just be a one-year window here. I mean, I think they arrived a year early. They should have been more competitive than they were this year, but they still were competitive. They just didn't live up to expectations. But, Ryan Pace, I know it doesn't look great right now. I know people are upset about the quarterback situation, but he did this the long way, right? And he built up talent. You saw that depth on defense. So that depth means that this thing isn't just going to completely collapse. I mean, that's how I look at it. There's still going to be a chance here. That doesn't mean that they're going to win a Super Bowl. Right. I think that there's still a pretty big there's a lot of work to do to take this from a good team to a great team, a Super Bowl team. I think that's what we learned this season. But they still should be in the mix next season, and it's just going to be a crucial offseason to keep this window open. I would be shocked, though, if it just falls apart. I guess that's always a possibility with the Chicago Bears. I should know better, having been around this team for 9 seasons, but I do think that they're going to be in the mix.
The only thing I would point out as the resident pessimist for the Monday evening quarterback is that the wins this season that got them to 7-7 were wins against inferior teams. And I'll give you the Cowboys and I'll give you the Vikings at home. But other than that, it's every cellar-dweller team that's going to be up there with a number one pick on the stage. The losses, the ones that were going to hurt, are Eagles, the Saints, right? The Packers twice.
Yeah.
You start to see that these are the teams that are in front of us. These are the teams that are going to the playoffs. And in those games, they weren't that competitive. You know, the one game we should have won was the game against the Chargers, but the other ones I mentioned, we all know that we were playing from behind and that there really wasn't a chance that the young Mitch Trubisky and this stagnant offense was going to do anything. So that's the only yin to your yang, where I'm saying you're looking at the future, and I'm like, yeah, but the teams that are competitive NFL squads looking for a playoff spot, they cleaned our clock this year.
Yeah, I think that's true. But, I don't know. The Bears also completely dominated the Vikings early on in the season, And I maintain, and this was an argument I had going into the season, as tough as the schedule looked, I thought that that argument was a little overrated. I thought the Bears would still be favorites in a lot of these games. And honestly, when you look back on it, like, they shouldn't have lost to the Raiders. The Eagles weren't, I mean, they might end up making the playoffs, but they weren't the team we all thought the Eagles were going to be this season.
The Rams aren't going to make the playoffs, right?
The Rams fell off. The Chargers, the Chargers are bad. I mean, they shouldn't have lost that game. And so I don't think this schedule was nearly as hard as it was supposed to be this season. Really, they're in the brunt of the worst part right now, and they're already eliminated. So that just tells, that's just another argument that they just terribly underachieved.
Now, my friend Matt, he texted me and said the Bears allowed the fewest points per game in the NFC, so that's got to be worth something. That's the optimism.
Well, and again, I mean, despite all the injuries and not taking the ball away, the defense kept the season alive.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have one of the worst offenses statistically in the NFL, they're still 7-7 despite having that.
Yeah.
I mean, the defense gets credit. You got to give the defense credit for that.
I mean, all we were asking for was 18th ranked. We weren't even asking for top 10. He goes 27th, 28th. What is this garbage? Like, I would have taken 14th in offense. He'd be like, oh, that's okay.
And that's all they needed.
That's all we needed.
They're probably in the playoffs if they have that.
All right. We'll take our last break here, and then we'll come back with Adam and find out why we should watch the final two games. 312-981-7200. It's the Monday Evening Quarterback here on 720 WGN. It's the Monday Evening Quarterback, and Adam Hogue is on the line, WGNradio.com/Bears. So the Chiefs come to town, and it's a Sunday night football game. They didn't flex it out, which I was surprised, but I guess Chicago's a big market. What should we be watching for? I mean, are we still in this game of watching the evolution of Mitch Trubisky?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's incredibly important in these final two games. You have two good opponents, two teams that are headed to the playoffs, and the Chiefs and the Vikings. And, you know, it matters. It still matters what this offense can do and what Trubisky can do against these teams. You know, Trubisky isn't directly going up against Patrick Mahomes. He goes up against the Chiefs defense, not the offense, but that's part of the storyline this week. And, you know, I would not blame any Bears fan for just not wanting to watch that because it could be incredibly painful. But on the flip side, you know, Trubisky can keep this recent. I didn't think he had a terrible game yesterday. I didn't think he had a great game either. But if he can continue to look respectable, if not, you know, pretty good against the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, you know, that can change some of the narrative. It still seems like people are just can't wait to pile on Trubisky, and that kind of sets him up for an unfortunate situation facing Mahomes on Sunday night in a huge window on Sunday Night Football with everybody watching. But it also could be an opportunity for him to, you know, to change the narrative.
He had one of the best games in NFL history on Thursday night against the Cowboys, right? So he could do it. The problem I had yesterday is it seemed like the elements affected him. But more importantly, in the fourth quarter, which you and I have talked about this, and you looked at his film from college, this is what he does. He's a gamer at the end, you know, gunslinging around. He threw a miscommunication interception to a defensive line, and then they were out and downs after he threw it over Allen Robinson's head. Now, he got him down there with 30 seconds, and they did that little razzle-dazzle stuff at the end to almost get a touchdown. But he missed almost every pass. I don't think he connected in those two drives with anybody. It was just he missed everything.
Yeah, it wasn't completely accurate. Guys also weren't really getting open. What happened on the interception, first of all, why it looked like he was throwing it to nobody was because that's an option route with Tariq Cohen, which has been one of the best things about the offense. I mean, things that have worked is Tariq Cohen running those option routes because they're hard to defend. It's not necessarily that anybody went the wrong way. It's that Trubisky needs to wait and see and read the leverage because Tariq goes whichever way the defender allows him to go. Mm. And then it's up to the quarterback to make sure that the ball's going wherever Cohen went. If you go and look at that play from the backside, from the end zone angle, Cody Whitehair got beat off the snap. And there was pressure from Za'Darius Smith right up the middle, and Trubisky didn't have time to wait to see which way Cohen was going. And I think he just figure that, well, there's no way that this defensive lineman makes the play he did. And give Dean Lowry credit. From Northwestern, he made an outstanding play that you don't see defensive linemen make a lot. But that's what happened on that specific play.
But overall, just at the end, the slant routes, curl routes, option routes, whatever it was, he was wildly inaccurate at the end there. Who were the three best playmakers this year? I asked you this today when we were talking about this segment. If you could name the three guys who were the Bears' playmakers, I think we would agree on Allen Robinson. I think he's had an awesome year. He should be in the Pro Bowl. But after that, who do you put as a playmaker for this Bears team?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wouldn't give it to anybody involved in the running game. Yeah. I'm kind of down on Tariq Cohen a little bit. And I don't think it's really his fault. I just think they want him to be Tyreek Hill so badly, and he's just not. I mean, I think he's a good weapon to have, and but that's another thing. If anybody did not benefit from Trey Burton's being hurt and then really just getting nothing out of the tight end position, it's Cohen, because that's where the defensive attention switches to when they don't have that U tight end to defend. Yeah. So I think that hurt. That hurt Cohen this year. To answer your question, though, the weird thing is I think I would go with Anthony Miller next.
Yeah.
And a lot of this season was him struggling to do the details and really produce.
He produced after Taylor Gabriel got out. I give him that. But, yeah, when Gabriel's on the field, Miller looked lost.
Yeah. And then I think I'd go Mitch.
Yeah.
I think I'd go Trubisky after that.
Yeah.
He did turn a corner in the middle of the season and start making plays, and that's the best way to put it. The last few weeks, he looked like a playmaker. Yesterday, it was less consistent, but there were moments there where he made some incredible plays.
Anthony Miller's got this thing, and it's a little pet peeve of mine, that he seems to I don't know, he's a receiver, and obviously he's one of the best in what he does because he made it to the professional level. But there's something about when the ball is up in the air, he goes up with one hand like he's going to catch it with one hand, and he tips the ball up in the air. And I'm just like a backyard football kid from when I was 12 years old, and I didn't even do that stuff. You know, like, what is he doing half the time? If you're not going to catch the ball, I mean, at least go for two hands, right? Maybe that's just me.
So I have a feeling that shoulder's still bothering him. Yeah. You may remember earlier in the season, and I think it was in London, if I recall, he actually ripped his... He was still wearing the shoulder harness, and he ripped it off. Yes, it was in London, because early in the third quarter, he kind of gator-armed a ball, and it turned out the harness was holding it back. And so he pulled that thing off and played with... They cut it off, and he played the rest of the game without it. So... I think that helped him, but you saw yesterday even he got hit out of bounds and he was holding that shoulder. It doesn't seem like it's 100%. Looks like it's still an issue, and I do wonder if that's part of the reason why it looks like sometimes he can make a better play on the ball and doesn't.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome year of talking to you, Adam. Let's get one in January. We'll do off-season moves of what we think this Bears team needs to do to get better. The Monday Evening Quarterback, we'll put the podcast up after the show, but it's every Monday here, and we'll get one in January 2020. Adam Hoke covers the Bears, WGNRadio.com/Bears. Adam, thanks, bud.
Absolutely. Let's do it anytime this off-season.